now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah!
See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And babes.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the house of pain. Back to the house of pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the premiere episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. From classics to cults and all the cheese in between, the movies are B, but the entertainment is grade A. And I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti, here to take you through the wonderful, wild world of B-Movies. Now, some of you might be asking yourself, why a B-Movie Podcast? Well, looking around, I didn't see any that satisfied what I wanted to talk about. And I think there are a lot of people who are into B-movies, especially the science fiction movies from the late 50s and 60s. Those B-movies that served a purpose as part of the Hollywood film system of the time. And look, folks, I have no problem talking about the movies you want to hear about. I want to talk about these kind of things, and I want to talk with you. So the idea is this, folks. I'm putting this out there. I'm having a good time doing it, and I want you to be part of this as well. So join me as we take our premiere episode and look at the 1958 classic, It, the Terror from Beyond Space.
How could that thing have gotten aboard?
And why? Just to kill us?
What is the usual reason an intelligent creature kills?
It's hungry. What made you so certain it's intelligent, Colonel? Not just an animal.
It opened the door to see compartment.
In the silent void of outer space, puny man matches his cunning against a monster from Mars running rampant, howling for all the flesh and blood on Earth.
It, the Terror from Beyond Space, was released August 13th, 1958. It was distributed by United Artists and had a running time of about 68 minutes. The director was Edward Kahn, who is best known for directing the R-Gang comedies from 1939 to 1943. The producer was Robert Kent and Edward Small. The writer was Jerome Bixby. The cast is Marshall Thompson, Sean Smith, who was really Shirley Patterson, Kim Spaulding, Ann Doran, Dabbs Greer, who some of you might know as the preacher from Little House on the Prairie, Paul Langdon, Robert Bryce, Richard Benedict, Richard Hervey, Tom Carney, and Ray Crash Corrigan is it. Our story opens in 1973. The first manned spaceship from Earth to Mars lost contact with us just after they landed. A second ship was sent as a rescue mission. They discovered that of the original 10-man crew, only Colonel Edward Carruthers was left alive. Carruthers is suspected of murdering the rest of his crew and is being returned to Earth to stand court-martial. Carruthers denies that these charges and claims that a humanoid Martian was responsible for the deaths. Commander Colonel Van Heusen thinks Carruthers guilty and plans to get a confession out of him in the four-month journey home. While several members of the crew pass the time playing chess, Keinholz investigates a noise coming from the lower level. He is killed and his body is shoved into the ventilation duct. Keinholz's death scream is heard only by Carruthers, who insists on investigating. As they search for Keinholz, Gino is abducted. Once they realize that Gino is missing, they search once again. This time, Carruthers discovers Keinholz's body in the air duct. As they try to save the nearly dead Gino, it attacks the crew. Bullets have no effect, which forces the crew to leave Gino behind, even as his brother Bob protests. The crew tries to use hand grenade, gas grenades to stop the Martian, but to no avail. Then they try to electrocute it on the stairs, but it did not stop it. When they trap it in the ship's atomic reactor room, they expose the creature directly to the ship's nuclear pile. While the Martian seems annoyed by this and stays away from the pile, it is not stopped. The creature smashes through the heavy door and starts tearing through metal hatches that separate the levels. The survivors were forced to retreat to the topmost deck. While they tried to figure out a plan, they realized that the creature must have snuck aboard the ship through an open hatch door right before takeoff. Carruthers notices that the oxygen consumption is much too high. It is surmised that the creature must have huge lungs to breathe on Mars because of the thin atmosphere. In a last chance, they don their spacesuits and trap the creature as it rips through the hatch leading to the last level. The command deck airlock is opened and exposes the vacuum of space. As the level suffers a violent decompression, the creature suffocates and finally dies. A final press conference is held on Earth, detailing what has happened and clearing Carruthers. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so that is the summary of this movie, one of my all-time favorites. Gotta admit, as a kid growing up, this was one of my favorites to watch, and it is a very influential movie for several reasons. Just want to talk a couple quick things here. As I mentioned, Marshall Thompson looks familiar if you know stuff from in the 60s stuff. He later became a star more on TV. Kim Spalding came, same kind of thing. Dabbs Greer, when I saw this, I know he looked very familiar, and I was not a Little House in the Prairie fan, but my wife is. And the other day, I was like, oh man, that's the guy from Little House in the Prairie. Totally put two and two together. He's the preacher from there. When this was initially released, it was run, again, this is a B-movie, it was run with a co-feature of A Curse of the Faceless Man from 1958. That's one of those movies that I didn't see until I was much older, as it was a lost title. The music in the movie, you might have noticed, the opening title, sounded familiar. Well, Bert Schaefer and Paul Sautel took their theme, the opening theme from Cronus, which is another of their movies, Cronus was 1957, changed the opening bars and reused it there. And I know some of you may be thinking, like, oh, what? This happened more often than not, folks. You will hear music, especially in the Universal Monster movies. You hear the same music over and over again. It happened. I know Toho did that several times. It just was standard practice back then. You had people who were in-house or whoever was doing it, and that's what happened. That's what you got, started getting from back then. One of the things that this movie is known for, and this is kind of funny when you think about it now, was that the suit itself, Ray Crash Corrigan plays it in the movie. Ray, this was his last film, so he was not in the best of health, and he didn't want to travel out to Paul Blaisdell's studios for a test fitting of the costume. So they got on set and they started fitting him the costume, and it turns out the headpiece was too small. So as they tried to fix it, whatever, his big chin, as they would call it, his bulbous chin, that's what it was said, stuck right through the mouth, and they had to figure out a way around this. So they painted it to look like the monster's tongue. And I know a lot of people think of that as being like, oh, his tongue sticking out. It's got to be so silly. For the budget they were on and the time they were spending, it really makes sense. Because if you think about it, you had to make something work. And to me, that always added more to the creature, that he was really struggling to breathe. His mouth was always open. He's sucking in a lot of oxygen. He's chewing up the air. So his tongue should be sticking out. And to be honest, unless you're really looking for it, you really truly don't notice it once you get involved in the story. The other problem was Blaisdell had these cat-like eyes that were one of his trademarks. Well, they didn't work either, so they ripped them right off. And I think that really helps the overall look of the monster, especially when it's in the reactor room and you see the pile exposed. You can see Corgan's eyes right through the mask. It gives the Martian a much more humanoid look to it instead of some crazy creature from outer space. And it clearly is a crazy creature from outer space, but it gives it more humanity. And you see that this is not just a killing machine, but a thinking creature who's trying to get them. In fact, during the movie, Carruthers says that this is a thinking creature. And they said, how do you know it's not just an animal? He said, well, it opened the compartment to C-Block. Clearly, it's looking for food. And that's what it's doing. As it breaks the Kainholz and Gino in half and it crushes them, it's sucking all the fluids out of them. It takes every single thing that possibly could be in their body that it could use for fluid, because again, we're talking about Mars here, and it drains it out of them. Which is why, originally, it was known as It, the Vampire from Beyond Space. Now, the problem with that was, they felt that calling it a vampire, people would think you're going in seeing Bela Lugosi or something along those lines, and clearly you're not. You're getting a Martian movie. And since they didn't want people to come in and have the wrong impression, calling it the Terror from Beyond Space lent itself better to the idea of what the movie was about. Principal photography took anywhere from 6 days to 2 weeks, depending on what sources you're to believe, and that really makes sense because this movie takes place mostly on a bunch of little sound stages. And as you see, they have a stairwell that goes up, and you never ever see the entire more than one stage at a time. And it makes perfect sense that they could have filmed all this on a soundstage somewhere in the back. What most people, again, if besides the tongue sticking through the mouth, know about this movie is that it was very, very influential for another important science fiction movie that came many years later, and that movie is Aliens. It is documented that the screenwriter Dan O'Bannon was heavily influenced by this, and Ridley Scott himself has said that this movie has been very influential when they were making Alien. There are scenes in It, the Terror from Beyond Space that you can see direct links to scenes in Aliens, especially the scene in the airlock at the end. The airlock at the end, when they open it up, it is exactly the same idea. Ripley gets in her suit, she opens the airlock, and the alien flies out instead of getting suffocated, which is why the alien's missing. Then when the Aliens begins, they have no proof of this. And yeah, they change things, but that's clearly part of that. Now, having seen It, the Terror from Beyond Space before I ever saw Alien, to me, that was like, it was no big deal. Many people feel going back to like, oh, how could this movie have ripped off Alien? Well, it's very hard to rip off Alien 21 years before it's made. The other main scene that people point to is in the ventilation shaft. When Kainholz's body is found by Carruthers, and they take it down, it is in the shaft with them. They go to get Gino, and as they get close to Gino, it attacks. Now, granted, the scene in Aliens is far different than the scene here, but the idea that this alien is moving around the ventilation shafts, it lends itself well to the idea that what's there. It's clearly not a shot-for-shot remake. It's clearly not, it was lifted directly from there, but what is there is definitely influenced by what was in It, the Terror from Beyond Space. And that, to me, is a great thing, because a lot of influence can come from different places. And it's important that you look at things in life, especially if you're doing anything artistic, or you want to do anything artistic, and look for where are you getting influence from. I'll be very honest, as someone who paints scale figure models, I often will reference clearly the movie that's coming from or something like that, but sometimes when I'm doing something that's an original sculpt, because I love original sculpts and the artists who are putting these out truly appreciate people who are doing something different than what is, you know, just another Frankenstein or Dracula, I'm often looking to nature for those kind of things. And I know that Ridley Scott has said that that was the case when they were designing the Aliens. I know Rick Baker and Rob Bottin and those guys have all looked to different things for inspiration. And I think what we're seeing here is that inspiration comes from many different places. As you look at It, the Terror from Beyond Space, as just a, you know, B-movie programmer, because that's what it was back in the day, you have to understand that these movies were what the people grew up on, what the monster kids of the 50s and 60s grew up on. And those movies became important because when those people became film directors, they made movies of things they wanted to make. truly, John Carpenter has gone from being the guy who made Halloween to a much more important director in the grand scheme of things. Ridley Scott went from the guy who made Aliens to making movies. In fact, in 2015, he made The Martian, and you're talking about a man who's made many important movies along the way, you know, sci-fi movies like Blade Runner and stuff like that, but also other important movies. And if you look at where they're getting their inspiration from, it clearly was the movies and the magazines like Famous Monsters of Filmland and those things of the time that helped inspire them to become the creative people they are and gave them an outlet. Now, some of you may not agree with me, and it's okay. You're welcome not to agree. The key is this, though, folks. When you're looking at a movie like It, the Terror from Beyond Space, which is, again, it's 68 minutes. It's not that super long a movie. They make sure that they're packing all of it in there. Now, you might say to yourself, Jay, the acting is not superb here. It's a B-movie. They did the best of what they had. Well, they don't have amazing sets here. Again, it's a B-movie. So it's just what they did, what they had to do here. This was not the A-picture. This was not Gone with the Wind. This was not the movie they put all the money. This is not Ben-Hur. This isn't, you know, years in the making. Clearly, they were banging these out quickly to make a profit. And that's what these movies did. And a lot of the youth, and again, these are people who... myself being in my mid to late 30s, most of our parents saw these in the movie theaters. And if you were lucky enough to have a parent who exposed you to these things as you were growing up, then you maybe got an appreciation for them too. And maybe you don't. Maybe you're discovering late in life, and that's great. I'll be very honest. My 5-year-old daughter loves these type of movies. She loves watching old movies with her dad because she gets to see giant creatures, and they're not terrifying. They're not, you know, she's not terrified of It, the Terror from Beyond Space, because she knows it's a guy in a suit. She understands how it's done. But today, if you show her something that's horrific and gory and bloody, my daughter understands that's how done with movie magic. And maybe some kids aren't, and that's okay. But you have to understand that if you don't teach them about the art that's there, they'll never truly appreciate anything that they're looking at. It's all disposable. This is not disposable kind of stuff. One of the other things that I wanted to touch on here, and again, this goes back to why I'm doing this podcast, is that I think that a lot of times we kind of think about those movies from back then and kind of just dismiss them. Not necessarily me. I love these things. But I think a lot of people today dismiss them as being old and antiquated, and they can't possibly be as good as the new Star Wars movie or the new Avatar or things like that. When you watch physical effects and people acting and doing the best they can with the material they have, you truly appreciate some of the craft of acting and some of the craft of what special effects artists had to do on a very, very low budget. And having things on a low budget is not necessarily mean that they're bad. A lot of times, physical effects now are kind of pushed to the side, and a lot of things you look at, we got to do it digital, we got to do CGI. And I'll be very honest, is that when you look at movies that came out in the 80s that have good practical effects, or even movies from the 70s and 60s, you can physically appreciate what's there. Now, when we see something like that, it's like, whoa, I didn't expect that to be there. And it's actually funny. I actually spoke with Steve Wang, who some of you might know from Stan Winston Studios, you know, did things like The Predator and Monster Squad, you know, kind of those little projects there. I say that in jest, clearly, folks. He's one of my idols about how to make these things in the same line as like Ray Harryhausen or Rob Bottin or Rick Baker. And I asked him point blank in a room full of modelers and professionals and stuff. I said, "Do you feel that that digital effects are ruining the system, or that they are ruining effects in movies, or that they cheapen it?" And he said, "You know, I love doing physical effects, but there's a time and place when I have to do digital." And he thinks that the marriage of the two is truly what's going to make movies better. And it was funny hearing a guy who had designed, you know, who helped work on the Predator suits and who had to design the Gill Man from Monster Squad. And if you listen back to the Monster Squad episode of the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror, you'll hear us talk about that, is that he had to invent this suit. Well, you're looking at that, and when you look at a movie like that, well done physical effects, you truly can appreciate what goes into it. A perfect example of this would be if you went to and sought out Sandy Kolar, another of Winston Studios, artist, who did a short movie called Batman Dead End. And I know it's 15 years old now, or whatever, but it's still on YouTube banging around. And that's Batman chasing the Joker with the Alien and with the Predator. And the Predator suits were all done by hand. They made this movie on the cheap. It's not super long. It's all of, I think, 10 minutes or so. But when you see that, you truly appreciate what goes into it. It's not all CG. There's no CG in it. It's not just CG'd out. It's not just crazy fight scenes. You can't see. It's just two guys in suits working. And I think part of that, too, folks, is some of the reason why I love these kind of movies. I love giant monster movies. I'm not taking anything away from like the stuff my brother talks about with his Godzilla and Daikaiju stuff. I love those too, but I really love the old cheesy giant movies from the 50s and 60s, those B movies, those movies that serve a real purpose, and those movies that help hopefully introduce kids to the great stuff that we enjoy. And again, that can be as simple as, like, those of us who are not into this, maybe we're into comic books, and you start introducing your children to comic books, or your niece and nephew, or whoever, that's what it is. Something had to get you into this, and this is what helped get me into the stuff I'm into nowadays. And I'll be honest, folks, is that you may not agree with me, and that's totally okay. And if you don't agree with me, great, let me hear it. If you do agree with me, great, let me hear it. Feedback's important. Because any podcaster is doing this, we're not getting paid. This is a labor of love, okay? And I have no problem. If you have a question or your concern or something you want to talk about, please let me know. You say, Jay, how am I going to let you know? How am I supposed to let you know what's going on? Well, here's how you can do those things. Easily, you could email me at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com, and I'll gladly answer your emails. I'll read emails on the show. Okay, you can find me on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. You can post stuff to the Choo Choo Freaks page on Facebook. I'm on there all the time. Okay, you can go to my website, which is www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. You can search on Facebook for the Art of Horror Collective page and post stuff there. You can find me on Instagram at Jason Giaconetti. You can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. I'm not hard to find, folks. If you want something, if you want to talk about something, if you want to, you know, talk to me directly on the email, or hey, I'll be honest with you, folks, I'm looking to get guests on this show. I want to get people on who have a passion for what we're doing and want to talk about the stuff we're talking about. It is important, folks, to, if you have something you want to say, to get it out. If you hold it in, you're gonna be like, wow, he's not talking about things I want to talk about. Let's talk about that. So for those of you who might be interested in purchasing It, the Terror from Beyond Space, and I'll tell you right now, folks, it is great. It is on Amazon. It is available on Blu-ray for $16.99. I myself picked up the Blu-ray of this when it became available. I actually pre-ordered it. Right? On DVD, on Amazon, for $6.25, you can get It, the Terror from Beyond Space and The Monster That Challenged the World, another classic B-movie from the same time. Okay, if you're going to do that, folks, let me ask you this. If you would go to the Two True Freaks website, click on the Amazon link and just go through that, you're going to do is this. You're going to help us keep the lights on here at Two True Freaks. It doesn't cost you a dime. It doesn't cost you anything at all. What happens is Amazon gives us a little kickback. It helps pay the bills here. That is how I order everything. All these movies that we're going to talk about and stuff, I get them through Amazon. My dad does it through them, my brother, everybody. And every once in a while, you'll see, like, you know, you'll hear people say it on their shows. I am, like, the biggest shill for it going because I want to keep this going. I love listen to these podcasts. I love that I don't have to pay for them. It's free entertainment. I get to hear people I'm friends with, people I've never met, talk about stuff that maybe I didn't know about. Have you ever heard me on when I've guested on Earth Destruction Directive with my brother, or when I'm on the vault, you've heard me say, support this stuff. I'm having loads of fun doing this, and I'm hoping you do too, listening. Okay, so I have one live read to do, which is cool. And, you know, so you say to yourself, maybe, Jay, I'm not really into giant bugs and stuff. Maybe I like things like Godzilla. Maybe I like Shogun Warriors. Maybe I like Ultraman. Well, you know what, folks, if you do, you want to check out Earth Destruction Directives, the Daikaiju podcast hosted by my brother, Luke Giaconetti. He will take you on a trip into the wild, woolly, and sometimes wacky world of giant Japanese giant monsters. From Godzilla, Rodan, and King Ghidorah to slightly less known like Gappa, Yungari, Varan. Okay? Everything in between there, Earth Destruction Directive is the place to go for all your Daikaiju needs. That's Earth Destruction Directive. where Daikaiju lives. Okay, folks, I think that's about it. We're wrapping it up here today. Thank you very much for listening. Again, shoot us feedback. Any questions at all, just let us know. I really, really want to hear from you folks, and I definitely want to get you involved and make this part of your show, because this is truly, I want to make this part of everyone together doing this. Next up, our second episode, we're going to be looking at 1954's Them. That giant ant movie, yeah, and I think you're thinking to yourself, on giant ants? If you've never seen Them, you're missing out. Them is a classic, great movie. And I have actually lined up our first guest. I won't tell you who it is, but anyone who's heard myself or my brother speak about why we're into this might have an inkling who might be on with me. And I'll be very honest, it's someone who has been very important in my life in helping shape what I'm into. And it's someone who also loves these movies as much as I do. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Keep those cards and letters coming. And keep watching the skies.
You have been called here again to receive further information about the story which was given to you last night. I will read you the text of a teleradio message received from the Challenge 142 less than an hour ago. This is Eric Royce talking. Of the 19 men and women who have set foot upon the planet Mars, 6 will return. There is no longer a question of murder, but of an alien and elemental life force. A planet so cruel, so hostile, that man may find it necessary to bypass it in his endeavor to explore and understand the universe. Another name for Mars is Death.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc., are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.